Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Eric Klingelhofer, Emeritus Professor of History at Mercer University, and we're talking about a book that he both contributed to and edited, Excavating the Lost Colony Mystery, The Map, The Search, The Discovery. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
There were so many things about this book that I enjoyed. First of all, this is one of the great mysteries in American history. And the other thing is, this is a great book that explains how modern and contemporary archaeology gets done. So I want to start out. Let's define the first colony foundation.
Well, we're a group of advanced in age archaeologists and historians who participated in earlier work on the early colonies in North Carolina established by Sir Walter Raleigh during the reign of Queen Elizabeth.
And why was the foundation important to organize? Like, was it just necessary? Because as you described yourself in the book, and I love this phrase, a plucky band of pro bono professionals, was it necessary that you sort of become a foundation in order to get the work done?
Oh, yes, yes. We've come to realize that with the development going on in the Outer Banks and elsewhere along Carolina and rising water levels, sea water levels certainly, it was endangering what might remain of traces of the colony. And as I point out in the book, we were really interested in the first colony, which was in 1585, and the first settlement and fort and all that. There have been some traces that have been found earlier by archaeologists and earthwork that had existed all these years and was known as Old Fort Raleigh.
Right.
President Monroe even visited it. But the real fort itself had not ever been discovered, nor the settlement that Raleigh's men had established there.
Now, for people who don't remember this, and again, this is one of the great mysteries. Okay, Sir Walter Raleigh disembarked at Roanoke in 1587, I think.
Well, he never actually was it in the U.S. Queen Elizabeth wouldn't permit that, but... Yeah,
that's right, because she had a thing for Sir Walter, didn't she?
Oh, very much so. He was quite the favorite for a number of years until he got one of her maids-in-waiting pregnant and then married her secretly, and the queen was not amused.
It was off with his head, wasn't it?
No, she threatened. Yeah, she popped him in the tower for a little while.
Okay.
Just to punish him. And she never would see this lady again.
So they left this.
Never let her in court.
Now, how many of these original colonists were disembarked at Roanoke?
Okay, well, there were basically two colonies. The first one was an exploration colony. That's what decided to settle on Roanoke Island because they were welcome there. And the Algonquin Indians were very appreciative of the strangers coming and bringing with them all sorts of European gifts. And that was set up to last 1 year and then maybe reinforced or not. And that did. But they sailed away. And it was only in 1587, that a civilian colony of families came, and they disembarked in that year. And we know a good deal about them because their governor was chosen to go back to England and get supplies because they were short of supplies. And when he did return after a few years, because the Spanish were attacking England with the Armada, he found no one there.
And that was like 1590, so that was only 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. And that's given the label the Lost Colony because no one has ever known what happened to them. There's been some clues, but sometimes those clues are misleading.
Now, just to put this in context, Jamestown was founded in 1607, right?
Yes, exactly.
So what did people think? And the funny thing is, this has sort of entered the American imagination of people who there was these stories about Virginia Dare, the first person born in the United States. There was supposedly carved into a tree was the name Croatoan or Croatoan.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And then and in your book, I read that when people were looking for these lost colonists, they kept seeing lights like distantly in the forest, but then nobody knew if it was the Native American, the indigenous people, or if it was the colony. Nobody ever found out. And there was just this huge puzzle that's gone on through the years, and nobody's found out much about it until recently.
Well, a lot of theories have been proposed for it. And sadly, it's attracted interest that is really unwarranted from hoaxers. And
well, there was a thing called the Dare Stones. Can you talk to me about what the Dare Stones were?
Yeah. Well, first one was discovered at the far end of the Albemarle Sound. That's 50 miles or so west of Roanoke Island, and in the woods, and it was a little vague about where exactly it was from and who found it, but nonetheless, it had what was thought at the time to be Elizabethan carving on it, and saying, this is Eleanor Dare, and we are lost, and most people have been killed, and, you know, to help us out, or something like that. And then a few years later, more stones were found in sort of intervals throughout North Carolina.
So it was like a continuing story.
Exactly.
Oh, my
exactly.
God.
Going down, maybe South Carolina and Georgia as she's trying to find her way with the few survivors. And that was delightful, but it was a hoax. A terrible hoax, and it wasn't Elizabethan carving. They used the wrong words, and even got the date wrong.
Other than that, it was great.
Well, yeah, it's a great story.
Are those stones still extant? Like, do people still have them?
Yeah, they're in one of the smaller colleges in Georgia has them. They were examined, and they thought maybe the first one was original, was good, and the rest were clearly fakes, and now it's been proven that the first one was a hoax as well.
Yeah. Now, the first real scientific archaeological surveys, and I'm going to see if I can remember the right. There are different essays in this book, by the way, but different authors, including yourself. There was no archaeology until the Fort Raleigh Tract was made a unit of the National Park Service in 1941. Is that right?
Well, there was no professional archaeology. There have been some observations made in the past, and some of them were positive, and others were just dismissive of the surviving earthworks as being nothing really to boast about. And of course, these are earthworks. They settled down on the ground. They get eroded, and they were quite low at the time when finally, first the state and then the park. National Park Service took it over. But then the Park Service, after the war was over, World War II, then they engaged in some serious professional archaeology.
Now, alongside that, there's been sort of a tradition. And I've seen this area. There was even a play, a musical drama that's performed. Is it every year? Paul Green's The Lost Colony?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, it's, I think, the longest running performance in America.
Wow.
It's been going, I think, because of the occasional hurricane and war. It's maybe not every single year, but it had planned to go, and it resumed again after a brief gap. But it's the longest running drama in America.
Now, can we say a moment, spend a moment just talking about the indigenous people there? They're part of the Algonquian tribes?
Exactly. They're about the most southern group of the Algonquins, which go up all the way to your area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, were they friendly to the colonists?
Well, some were and some weren't. the leaders of different townships or areas. We can't, shouldn't really call them tribes, but that's a term everyone's familiar with. They would see what advantage they could get from the English, and some proved very loyal and supportive, and others soon found that they were no longer able to take advantage. And also, the English came to think that this was Garden of Eden, that everything grew, readily, and there was no labor involved in it. Well, it is if you have a few people and a low standard of living, hand to mouth and
right,
catching a few fish and whatnot, that's fine. But if you bring over 100 civilians, families, children, and they didn't bring farming equipment with them necessarily, then they're a burden on the native societies, and they were eventually turned against by some of the people that had welcomed them.
Now, prior to the studies covered in this book, were there any serious archaeological digs or finds that led people to believe what had happened to these colonists?
No, not off the island. The only excavations had been on the island, and they were first by the National Park Service, and then in the 90s, a return to examine what had been turned up and unexplained, really, after that original work had taken place. And this was led by my former boss at Colonial Williamsburg, and the team that he put together then, funded by National Geographic, was indeed the very core of what has become, some years later, the First Colony Foundation.
And it's fascinating. For people who don't know how archaeologists work, again, this book is a really good introduction to some of the techniques, because you certainly do digs at different sites, but they're very carefully controlled. People just aren't out there with shovels digging where they think it might look good. It's a very systematic process. Can you talk about that?
Well, the first thing to always remember is that archaeology is destructive.
You're right.
As opposed to astronomy, we don't go around destroying planets, but we destroy the site by digging it. Particularly if you don't have ruins, stone or brick remains there, there's really not much to see. So a site is essentially disassembled layer by layer as you go down. And so you have to keep absolute strict control three-dimensionally of what you're doing.
Now, choosing a place to do a dig, you're just not doing this at random. You're basing it on some hunches or some guesses or some evidence from things like ground-penetrating radar and tomographic imagery, right?
Oh, yes, of course. We're lucky to have those available to us now. And satellite imagery, my goodness, you save a lot of time and energy. Otherwise, you'd be walking to the woods.
Just digging at random. Talk to me about how satellite imagery is important.
Well, you could see the different growth patterns through the different sort of radiation that is given back to the imagery. There are many different types of radiation, and some is visible light and others in different lights. And that will show up in the ground in certain conditions, show up very readily. You've all seen the pictures, I suppose, of a dry earth. And in England, you get to see whole Roman villas all stretching out. You can see every single wall line there. But you're looking through the soil, and it's just where there's a wall or something, it's a lighter growth. It dries out more quickly.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Eric Klinghoffer. emeritus professor of history at Mercer University, and we're talking about a book that he both contributed to and edited, Excavating the Lost Colony Mystery, The Map, the Search, the Discovery. One of the wildest things I read in this book is about maps that were on file in Britain. Can you talk about this? There was one map in particular, La Virginia Pars map.
Yeah, that means the Virginia area in Latin. And
it was a map that was made back at the time.
Yes.
By John, was it John White?
Yes, John White, who was sent by Raleigh to draw images of what he saw. We've got some wonderful watercolors surviving by chance from his work there of the Native Americans, of the animals, the fish, the plants. It was just a whole compendium, almost an encyclopedia of what the New World would be. And among that material were a few maps, one of which is called Virginia Pars. And on that map, which ended up in the British Museum along with the rest of the collection, there is a very good drawing of the Outer Banks of North Carolina and the Albemarle Sound.
I couldn't believe how detailed it was. Those maps were amazing.
Extremely detailed. Well, because somebody else that Raleigh sent over was the mathematician and scientist, Thomas Harriot, who was one of the greatest, if quietest, I suppose you could say, scientific leaders of the Renaissance, certainly for the English Renaissance, a man who was up there with Galileo and Kepler and the rest, and just a brilliant fellow, but was never published because he always worked for a nobleman and got his funds for the nobleman, and the nobleman would keep that material. So the good part is that he was well-funded. He observed the moon through a telescope he himself had made and other things, but he was not given the license to go ahead and broadcast his findings.
Now, the weird thing about this map is it had a couple of paper patches on the map. Why were they there?
Well, it had been thought that they were just repairs.
Like any map rips.
You made a mistake. It's in ink. So what are you going to do? You're just going to cover it over and correct the drawing there. So we asked the British Museum. Well, what's underneath it? What did they have first? And the one we were asking about was actually a bit to the south. And they said, well, what's underneath it is some poorly drawn coastline. And so they corrected it. It was an error, and it was readily corrected. And then they said, well, we also looked at the other patch. And the other patch was at the far end of the Albemarle Sound, 50 miles west of Roanoke Island. And we knew 50 miles west was something important because one of the accounts said that the group of colonists, the family group, the civilian group, were going to go and move themselves 50 miles west.
Now, here's the
right there is where the patch was.
Here's the weird thing. Nobody had bothered up until that point to look underneath the patches.
Yeah, well, for one reason, it had the map that sort of pasted down and kept in folios, and so it would be difficult to look, but the British Museum had disassembled them all and put them on separate pages for an exhibit at one point. And so they were able to examine it closely, and they were able to look through it and see that there was an image of a fort, a Renaissance-style fort, right there at the junction of two rivers. And
nobody knew that before.
Nobody had known it. It had been hidden by, who owned this map was Sir Walter Raleigh.
That weasel. The history of this man.
He was hiding. He was hiding the location because of all the Spanish spies. Spain had destroyed, massacred an entire French colony in Florida in the 1560s, and they didn't want this to happen.
Wow.
To the English colony in Carolina or Virginia, as they called it then.
Now, and the other thing is that in the whole history of the map went through some problems. There was a fire and there was water damage too. And the amazing thing is they couldn't use x-rays to examine what was underneath the patch. They couldn't lift the patch because if they did, it's like lifting something that's been glued. It's going to damage the paper. So they basically had to use the very simple light table and put the patch on the light table and look through the patch. And that's where they found this. I think that's one of the most amazing finds in the last couple of decades. That's just so wild.
It's amazing what these collections have. You just have to examine them in, not to make a bad pun, but in a new light.
But what did this mean for your group here in the area?
Well, of course, once we saw the images through that, we asked them to please use other technologies to get what other information you can from this map. And so they examined this area of the map certainly very closely, and they found even something more surprising. On top of the patch, there had been something. It wasn't a clean patch. There had been something that had disappeared or been erased. And that was the image of what looked to me, certainly, like a defended city.
Wow.
Again, another Renaissance image that is fairly typical of the time. It turns out that neither of those images are reality. The fort was never built, and we know because we searched for it, using all these different technologies, in ground and from space and whatnot. And there was no town like that built, certainly not a concentrated town. That isn't what we found at all.
So what did you find?
We found first one site with English artifacts that could date, and then we proved that they did date to the 1500s.
Wow.
Just a scattering of them. Adjacent.
Now, these are like the pottery shards?
Exactly. These were the shards which you could date fairly well.
Because it's a specific style of I think it's the Hampshire border ware.
Well, that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
And so you actually know when those shards were made?
Well, in a general time period, but they're not from the 1700s at all. They're not even from much of the 1600s. They're more or less corresponding to the reign of the Tudor dynasty, which ends with the death of Queen Elizabeth in 1603. But there are other wares as well. There are storage jars and things like that.
Wasn't there a pipe, too?
There are no pipes outside of perhaps.
Oh, you
Indian,
were looking for pipes.
That's
There's a great paper in this book which explains all the wares that you would be looking for. So we're in the last couple of minutes of the interview. How confident are you that you understand what happened to these colonists?
We found not one site, but a few years later we found a second site, which has even more finds from the Elizabethan period.
Wow.
And that, again, is one. This one was not associated with an Indian village, so we could see that there's not necessarily a clear relation between one and another there. But we believe that now our hypothesis is that they settled in farmsteads along the Chowan River, which is running north and south at the end of the east-west Albemarle Sound. And we know what reason why they went there, not just because of the good land that had been discovered, good agricultural land that had been discovered by the exploration colony, but because the chief of that area, the king of that area, was a firm ally of the English.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it just assumed that they just sort of blended into the native people? That they just sort of, they were just out there isolated. Nobody ever came up to them, so they just lived their lives and died, or some of them may have married off to indigenous people, and that's it. They just sort of disappeared.
That would be a nice way of looking at it.
Okay.
There are other more tragic possibilities. That is the death toll that diseases would bring to the English, but also to the Native Americans in which they found themselves.
Certainly
that tribe that we're talking about dwindled in power and authority very rapidly within a generation, and soon became nearly extinct.
Eric, we're completely out of time. And by the way, for the benefit of the audience, there's so much more in this book too, including a fascinating story about two Algonquins that went back to England and what happened there. My guest tonight has been Eric Klingelhofer, Emeritus Professor of History at Mercer University. And we've been talking about the book that he edited and contributed to. It's a fascinating read from several points of view. Excavating the Lost Colony Mystery, The Map, The Search, The Discovery. Eric, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.